This is the London FinTech Podcast, brought to you by your host, Mike Ballaman, bridging the worlds of suits and t-shirts, of finance and technology, bringing you insights, stories, and inspiration from the golden age of opportunity and innovation happening in London right now.
Hi, this is Mike Ballaman, and this is the London FinTech Podcast, episode 249, brought to you in association with Smart and enlistedboard.com. And I'm delighted to be joined today by Annie Sunny, co-founder and chief business officer of payments infrastructure fintech TerraPay, whose technology, amongst other things, powers a phenomenal 7.5 billion bank accounts. And that's a lot of bank accounts. We'll hear more about TerraPay later, but today's main course topic focuses on the opportunities and challenges of founding a business in a domain that one doesn't know. At a super simple level, what is clearly obvious is that the advantage of not knowing anything about an area is that one isn't boxed in by orthodoxy within that area, or indeed any box whatsoever. The disadvantage, on the other hand, is that one doesn't know anything about it. However, hopefully, Annie will have far more detailed thoughts on this topic than my incredibly short thumbnail sketch. Otherwise, this will be the shortest podcast ever. Plenty to talk about, so let's get on with the show. Good afternoon, Annie. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Good afternoon, Mike. Thank you for having me, and thank you for London FinTech Podcast.
Excellent. Well, we were talking a little bit beforehand, and as is the modern way, business is increasingly international, and you're someone who's been relatively international yourself.
Thank you for asking this question, because it's so close to my heart in terms of, you know, how I have evolved as a person. I remember growing up in Mumbai, did my studying there.
Was it Mumbai when you were there? Was it and this old name?
So, yes, I am old. So when I was growing up, it was still Bombay. And then somewhere in between, and it may change to Mumbai. So I think it's an interesting question. But yes, did most of my work initially, and our studies and everything in Mumbai. And then as you grow up, you entrepreneurship, kicks in, right? You know, for some people, and that bug definitely got to me. And, one thing which came to a realization was, if you were to start something which is more global and international, there needed to be a global outlook itself. And what I did was, negotiate. And I'm a sales guy, right? So I negotiated with my family, a young family, and said, why don't we actually look at taking the first bold step of going outside our comfort zone. And we picked up one of the most interesting countries, the Netherlands. You know, no English, driving on the left side as compared to the right side. Everything which was different, we picked that. Survived the first year, I would call it, in the Netherlands. Google Translate really came really, really handy. You know, anything from the supermarket to whatever you want to do, I had to use a phone and a Google Translate.
This is the case in Amsterdam, because from my perspective of the continent, the Dutch by far speak the best English. And if you're in Amsterdam, it's very widely spoken, unlike many other countries in Europe.
So unfortunately, I didn't pick up Amsterdam.
Ah, that's where you went wrong. I see, yes. You put your finger in the map and you slightly missed Amsterdam, and you got The Hague or somewhere.
You're right. I picked up a small village between Leiden and The Hague, but that's where the American school was. So it's important to get the kids to the right platform in terms of education. So we picked that up. But in general, everything in the Netherlands, even though Amsterdam is very English speaking, but you want to speak to the government, you want to speak to the municipality, you want to speak to, everything is in Dutch. But we survived, and I think that showed the first steps for me and my family is we can get out of our comfort zone, and it helped me a lot. As we speak up, you will hear that a lot about always getting out of your comfort zone is so extremely important, and I think me and my kids actually have learned that firsthand. And then, over some time, and when we had to, manage the project really well in the Netherlands, I said, okay, fine, let's look for another country. So last summer, we picked up from the coldest country to the most hottest country in the UAE. So now, guess what? Me and my family are now in the UAE, a different culture, a different food habits, different language in a way, but again, almost getting out of the comfort zone, let me put it this way. So yeah, and my family is loving it, you know, getting, and the kids are getting a fantastic exposure, so I am not complaining.
Excellent. And actually, I think Terapay is headquartered in the UK, and the standard of English isn't too bad here. It's much worse than it used to be. And actually, of course, the children will have an advantage, although they may see making different friends all the time a disadvantage, in that for children, they learn languages very easily. For for older folk, you sit there with a book trying to sort of remember the words.
I agree. I envy my daughter. She can speak 7 languages.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing. Yeah,
that's amazing. She needs a job involving 7 languages. Excellent. Okay, so look, you've been moving around, and you mentioned entrepreneurialism, which we've heard about once or twice in the last decade. So what kind of incarnations were you having and coming on to the main course in terms of founding in sectors that you don't know? What sectors were those incarnations in?
So I think it's an important position in terms of how you look at entrepreneurship. And one thing which I believe is and it's for everyone is to kind of, you know, get out of the comfort zone, as we spoke about. And what happens is, you know, once you have a position where you think you know everything, you get boxed. You start looking and there is no innovation. For if you really want to innovate, you need to ask questions. You need to ask the dumb questions. You need to almost be naive and pick up these kind of, you know, suggestions which come in and build solutions which are solving for real problems. And the real problems can only be solved by asking dumb questions sometimes. So to me, it's all about that. And I think what I have been lucky is, we had a set of co-founders who actually believed in that story of being, just doing something which we don't know. We believe what happens. We, of course, had the data in terms of what Terapay wanted to do, but we just challenged everything. And today, that is probably the only reason we are the fastest growing company in this space, because we challenged everything, Mike.
Ah, excellent. So if we go back to the day before you founded Terapay with you and your co-founders, or indeed the day before one of you had an idea about, hey, I've got suddenly woke up this morning with an idea of forming a company called Terapay in payments, and the other co-founder said, what's that and what's payments? What was it that inspired you? How many co-founders do you have? You talk like there's half a dozen or a dozen.
No, we're 4 of us.
There's quite a few. That's more than average, actually.
Yes. So that was, again, an interesting one. But I think, and as we speak about what each brings on the table, we'll talk about it. But the simple idea on which Terapay was built was this notion, Mike, of, if an SMS on a phone can be delivered to anyone in the world instantly without having to worry about, is Mike today in the UK or the Mike is in the US? Why can't money move the same way? So it was that concept of not worrying about asking a lot of questions, just being able to send an SMS. Why can't money go exactly the same way? That was our only position. Because what we found out was the cost of sending money globally was expensive, it was not agile, and more importantly, it was non-transparent. So we said, okay, SMS is a great example. 2015, WhatsApp wasn't that very popular then. Otherwise, we could have used a WhatsApp analogy as well. But we took the SMS analogy on that. That is how we built and we continue to build our infrastructure.
Oh, excellent. Well, at the end of the show, we'll hear more about Terapay and where you've got to 9 years later in terms of the products and services and your amazing success. But actually, we just had an example at home today, and I was joking to Bridget, my partner, saying that I can't believe we've had 10 years of fintech podcasts and we've still got this kind of problem, in that, to cut a long story short, she had a check from an investment that she inherited a while ago from her mother in America. And it was a dollar check, and it had come over from America in the post and all this kind of thing. And she has to take it to a bank in London and put it in a dollar bank account and all this kind of thing. And I was saying it's crazy because, you know, using the app banks over here, you just take a photo of a sterling check and you know, the money appears in your account. And I said, absolutely crazy. I said, what's going on with this stupid fintech stuff that you can't just take, and she's got about 2 or 3 app banks as we all do, you can't just take a photo of this and your app bank makes the problem go away. I mean, I know it's a dollar thing, but it is possible to do FX these days. Anyway, that's just a personal story of how even after however many years you want to say of the fintech revolution, whether it's 20, whether it's 10, whether it's 15 or whatever, occasionally one comes across something which is still basically pretty 19th century technology. I assume in the 19th century, if she had that investment, she would have got a cheque which made its way across the Atlantic on a boat, and she'd have to cash it at some bank, having opened a dollar bank account, and a whole bunch of stuff. So it's not as if fintech has completely solved all the problems yet, and there's still more to be done. So let's just abstract away from fintech at the moment. What is your background then in terms of domain? Was it near finance or far away, or coming back to what the various partners brought? Did you just basically have a history of sales? So you think, oh, look, I'll bring sales to the party, and without wishing to say that sales is easy. One of the essences of sales is to understand what the customer's pain is and go and tell your product guy to help solve the pain. So that's perhaps more of a transferable skill set. I mean, tech, as I said before in the introduction, well, technology is technology, and whether it's MotoGP, Amazon, TerraPay, or for that matter, the London FinTech Podcast, you've got someone sitting in front of a computer, so data is data. And then you've got the more domain-specific stuff. So maybe just like to give the listeners a bit of a feel for where the four partners brought their expertise from, and in these different verticals, or indeed in different parts of the organogram, which are the ones which are most different from one vertical of global business to another vertical of global business, and which are actually relatively similar in terms of you sit there and you're a dev and you program stuff and you don't really care what industry you're in to a certain extent at a certain level.
Sure. So the fundamentals were very clear. We wanted to move money globally very instantly, like an SMS, instantly. So that was a keyword. So to do that, you know, I have a background on financial services, so I understood what is really required from a liquidity, money management, money movement perspective, FX and all that perspective. My other co-founders came in from the telecom industry. They had no understanding of cross-border money movement. What they brought in was what the telecom industry does really well. You know, builds transactions on scale, you know, is able to process small value transactions and deliver those small value transactions instantly. So we brought in the financial services kind of an understanding, married it with the thoughts of how a telecom industry really works, and you know, came out with a unified network, which allows us to grow seamlessly, grow at infinite pace, at the same time able to process these transactions in the most efficient and the most compliant way. So just to give you a sense, you know, cross-border money movement, and you spoke about a word called fintech there. I really don't understand that, honestly, Mike. What I really understand is, and we all understand this, global cross-border money movement is actually a business of a couple of things. One is being able to do your compliance and regulatory stuff really, really well. That is a cornerstone of how cross-border money movement really is. The second one is able to have a technology. So in that way, you could say the tech part of it, but a technology which is completely agile and has multiple touch points with the various new methods which are coming in cards, NFC, you have QR codes, you have everything, you know, you got Face ID. How can you make money movement easy? How can you make payments easy, cross-border and domestic? So that's a technology piece. And the third and the most important piece is where the regulators come in is how does balance of payments between countries operate? You know, we sometimes think is like, you know, listen, you know, I'm sending money from one country to another. How does it really reach? How does the banking regulators in these two markets, reconcile on an transaction by transaction basis? That you three things put together is cross-border money movement. So it is, in a sense, you need to understand, you need to know things about financial services, you need to know about AML, CFT and regulatory, and also you need to know platform. When you put this together and you bring it and build it at scale, that's what you can deliver a global money movement network.
Oh, excellent. So in terms of the first point, which is that if I or you next week or 10 years time moving to an area we don't know and we wish to form a business, then we need to look at the critical parts of the organogram. And I know you need the whole organogram, that's why it's an organogram. But as you say, in the particular case of the product and service you're looking at, there are these points like regulation, like technology, like finance that we need to know about. So one approach is simply to have a bunch of co-founders or a C-suite from very early on who understand each of those. And then in a sense, the challenge of gluing all that together is at one level a human challenge, in that everyone's got to be able to see eye to eye, meet, compromise, explain themselves and other things which are simple on paper, but in practice can take time. And if you don't have the right human dynamics in a team, that will be unstable and not work. And yes, and then, you know, minor matters within the FS, as we've talked about on the podcast before. We all say sending money from one country to another, but no money actually goes on aeroplanes or boats. There's information and there's, you know, banks do funny things, but let's not get into that sort of rabbit hole. So the first approach is that you get a bunch of senior folk in your technology startup, whatever it is. Let's say it's MotoGP or Formula One, it doesn't really matter, or, you know, a subsidiary of Amazon or subsidiary of Meta or something. You get people that know the areas. Somehow, quotes unquotes, you glue them together. And then one thing you said before, which I quite liked, because I've used this many times in my career for many decades, and it takes a certain amount of self-confidence to do it, is you use the phrase, and it is the phrase that everyone uses, to ask silly questions. But actually, generally, if you ask, this is going to sound very funny, if you ask a good silly question, it's not a silly question, it's just a very fundamental question. So if you're in any area, let's take an example of MotoGP, let's go far away from finance. So Ducati, the Italian motor manufacturer, had one world championship in about 20 years. They'd thrown tons of money. They completely sort of failed. Then they got a new head engineer in Gigi, who knew a lot about motorbikes or whatever. And he came in for the first time into the MotoGP, the Formula One equivalent for motorbikes. And he totally revolutionized the industry by sticking funny wings and aerodynamics on the outside of the bike. No one had thought of that before, because you don't do that. Well, he did it, and now they've world championed several times in a row. I mean, I gloss over a hell of a lot. He's a brilliant engineer and all that kind of stuff, and the others are having problems keeping up and copying him. What do you want to say on this thing about good silly questions, as I'm calling it, which is that people think, oh, that's a silly question, because we all know the answer is this, whereas actually it's a good silly question if, as a result, you're exposing a belief system within a certain domain, be it financial services payments, be it motorbike racing, where people have just, without realising it, assumed that something isn't possible. So what is a good silly question in your experience?
So let me answer the first part of your question in terms of, you know, what we looked at. We looked at people and culture as the two cornerstones of how even we as four co-founders come together. We spend a lot of time speaking to each other before even, you know, ideating, to understand, first of all, as people, do we gel? And can we work together for a number of years? I think, to me, it is the fundamental of any entrepreneurial venture. People sometimes don't spend a lot of time on that. I encourage everyone to actually do that piece first. You know, speak about, you know, who you want to work for 15 years, for 10 years. So that's I think, the cornerstone of it. And then the most important position is, you know, technologies will change. Mike, you've seen this all the time. You know, we didn't have crypto in 2000, whenever it was. Technologies change. What doesn't change for an organization is the culture. And the culture has to be driven from the top. I have seen personally the companies which have been successful, if you go underline and go actually to the root cause of why they have been successful, you will see it is people and it is culture. So what we did was we looked at a set of people, you know, in this case, the four co-founders, and said what everybody brings on the table. So we had a co-founder. He was, you know, has completely understanding of regulatory and compliance. He said, really, this is an important cornerstone of our business. We need to have someone who has full skin in the game, who is fully aligned with us and understands the money movement from a regulatory standpoint. We got him on board. Same thing we did with someone who understood technology and said, okay, fine. If you had to really build a slick platform which runs and can run for multiple decades, we need to build it, you know, grounds up, and we needed someone who can build that. So we got that. And then, of course, we wanted someone who can actually put this all together and has done it in the past with some experience in a different domain maybe, but somebody who's got an experience. So that is how we started. And I think the reason we are successful as a company is because of people and because of that culture. It continues to be there. And what you will see a success is even today, there is a position for everyone in the org. We are probably close to around 620 people now across close to around 35 countries where we have offices. The culture remains of still asking the right question. In fact, there is a very interesting logo in all our offices. You know, you will not hear this. We say, stay hungry, stay humble. And I think that is the whole cultural piece of how we, I believe, and I think all of my co-founders believe, is what the secret sauce for anything which you do entrepreneurially. So now it's not financial services, it's not fintech, it's not, you know, it can be anything. You build your organization on those pillars, I think in most cases you will have a successful infrastructure ready.
Yes, and there's obviously a number of things in what you say. I mean, in terms of the binding energy within a business being culture, we've talked about that once or twice in the past. And as formerly, you have binding energy in a country, in a nation, amongst a people. And religion, as many people know, comes from the Latin religio, to bind. It binds people together. And without that binding energy to draw anything together, be it a marriage, be it a partnership in a business, be it a company in 35 countries, then things will tend to fly off. There will be more friction and all these sort of matters. And actually, just I was watching at lunchtime just before we recorded this, an elder in the Navajo tribe, Wally Brown, who's got a very good YouTube channel, talking about various aspects of the Navajo culture. And obviously in terms of the Native Americans, who had their nations for tens of thousands of years, the binding energy there for them was stories. And in the particular case of the Navajo, actually rather like India, in that amazingly enough, pen and paper hadn't been invented when the Buddha was around, for example. So the Buddha spoke so much, it's unbelievable. But actually, all this stuff was memorized and passed on orally from one person to another. And in terms of the Navajo, they were told by the beings that appeared in the very old days, the stories that are told, that they're not to write their language down. Because if they write their language down, they were told, you'll stop speaking to each other. So it's a really interesting point, actually. So they make a big point of just talking and not writing their stories down. The stories are related from grandparent to grandchild and on through the generations. And in the same way, within the business, they need to be as well. The stories of, well, this is a good example of what we are, and this is the kind of thing that we're not. And going back to humility, talking about Latin, it reminds me of the very well-known thing that Roman emperors, when they were crowned or emperored or whatever they were, I had a slave dragged along behind them in a chariot saying, remember you're mortal, remember you're mortal. So every business could do with remembering that one day this business will fail. Hopefully not today, hopefully not tomorrow, maybe not next year, maybe not 10 years, but 100 years, 200 years. So if one's always looking out from that perspective, that actually is a safety thing in itself. So we've spoken about this, and because you guys have been very successful at doing it, perhaps you're not the best case study, but as you say, you've done businessing in a number of countries. You're in a hell of a lot of countries at the moment, and you will have seen it elsewhere, even if you haven't personally experienced these challenges. But so these are the opportunities. These are how one goes about doing it and binding it all together. So what are the, beyond the binding and culture, what do you think the challenges of this model are? If I go into, I open a restaurant tomorrow, how hard can it be? It looks easy from the outside. But actually, more than 50% of restaurants in London go bust within a year. If I haven't taken another partner on board who knows something about restaurants, I'll make all the idiot mistakes that every naive person makes into an area. That's just one example of a challenge. So what do you think the challenges are, as opposed to the opportunities, of moving into domains where it hasn't been done before? So as you say, the instant payments around the world hadn't been done before. And some things that haven't been done before, let's take Elon Musk as a prime example. No one's lived on Mars before. How hard can it be? Well, quite often it's harder than you think. And actually, for all we know, it may not actually be possible. So this is the kind of thing which is, it's important to be ambitious, as you say, to get outside the comfort zone. But equally, it's important not to think you can leap off the top of sort of Mount Everest, flap your arms and land safely. So So how do you approach that whole area?
Absolutely, and I think and that's where experience comes in. That's where sometimes gray hair comes in to be able to kind of think through that. But I think today we are blessed with something which is called data. I think for us and for everyone, again, I think data plays a big role. What is really, really important is how are you able to decimate that data? How are you able to get to the real problem? I'm a strong believer of, there is a problem for which we have to find a solution. It's not the other way around. And I've seen fantastic ideas, but are they solving a problem? They're probably looking for a problem to solve for because they built something which looks nice. I don't believe that's the way to do it. It's a boring way of doing things, but what it really means is to know what the real problem is, you need to probe, you need to put that into the data, analyze the data, go back and probe. If you get the same answer, it's perfect. You ask the same question, that's where I'm talking about almost being dumb. Asking those questions again and again, again and again. It's almost like a psychometry test in a way. But that's what it gives you, you're able to build your fundamentals on that. But it always and always has to be about solving a problem. Yeah, just because it's shiny doesn't mean it's going to last. It can be a terrific idea to start with, but if you look back and say, hey, is it something which will last for 50 years? And I'll give you an example. Watch, when we looked at money movement, the question which we really asked was, will there be still people going from one country to another for better jobs, for better money, for better education? That was the only question we asked. And the answer which came in all the time was, even though the world so-called is be talking about being a global or a one single world, there is still going to be migration. People are still going to move from one country to another. People are still going to buy things from one country to another. It is always going to happen. Global commerce and global money movement will continue because people and individuals will move from one country to another. So we got that emphasized, re-emphasized with a lot of probing, asking the dumb questions again and again, as I said, and that's where we came to. So to me, that is how we build. And now when you know people are going to move, people are going to send money. Now, then the second thing comes in. How can I make it faster? How can I make it quicker? How can I make it affordable? Is it a long-term thing? What is, and those on which you build the pillars. So to me, the base has to be 100% relevant, and it only comes from a large total addressable market. So we looked at that and said, this is something which will continue to be there for the next 100 years. So my infrastructure, if I build it well, will continue to be there for 100 years, if not more. And it will be relevant. The technology could change. The way we communicate could change. The way we wear could change. But people will still move, and which means people will still send money. That is how I see. And everybody, I would urge is to start looking at those fundamentals of how you want to even look at a new project.
Yes, and coming back to this issue about identifying problems. And the original question about how does one know which problems are solvable and which are not, I guess it comes back to the old-fashioned constraints of time and budget. Mr. Musk has got quite a big budget, as he's got quite a big bank account, or bank account, sir. So he is in a position to devote decade or decades to his Mars project, which is the kind of timescale one needs. So if you've got an immensely difficult problem like that, there's no point imagining it you can fix in a short time scale. So you need the money and you need the budget, and then you find that some problems aren't solvable within the budget and the money. And so then in terms of the business, either you're a startup and you start up saying we want to solve this problem which no one else has solved, and then you need the right amount of money and the right amount of time. And as we know, most startups fail. So most startups fail to solve the problem that they're trying to address within the boundaries of time and budget. Once you're a mega company, like in Amazon or something like that, you can decide, oh, we're going to go into, I don't know, cloud storage. And that would be a problem to deliver at the price they want, but they have enough cash flow, they have enough resources, they have enough time to be able to solve something which isn't as difficult as going to Mars. So I think it's time and budget, and once you're a business with some momentum, you've got some speed and direction. Okay, so pulling all this together, we've spoken about a number of dimensions, and you've given us a good feel from an insider's perspective about what it's like to move with a team of people into domains that not everybody knows and address problems which I've never thought to be problems, but I've just thought to be how the world works and change it. What would you like to leave as sort of parting messages here, the key sort of takeaways? If, for the sake of argument, a niece or a nephew of yours is listening to this in a few years' time, what should stick in their mind about this?
Thank you. There are a couple of things, three things which come to my mind, and this could apply for any new project somebody wants to. The first one is, be prepared for being able to get on a rough ride. That's extremely important from an entrepreneur's perspective. It is an extremely difficult and sometimes very unrewarding kind of position, especially at the start. And you'll have more tough and bad days than good days. You have to keep that in mind. I would always tell that to my kids. The second one is, try to solve for a larger set of a problem statement and look for simple solutions. Everybody is looking for simple solutions. And the reason I like, for example, WhatsApp, was what they only tried to do was to give a notification of the message being delivered and read. That is the reason why WhatsApp is WhatsApp. SMS was there all the time. You could send an SMS. What you didn't know was, listen, is my text read by someone else or not? It was that simple. So, but it kind of solves a bigger problem. So look for that. And sometimes solutions can be very, very simple. And the third and the most important thing is, always build a business on the right side of regulations. And whatever those regulations are, you're in the telecom industry, you're on the financial service, anything. That was the own. It's a hard road. It's a difficult road. It takes a while, but in the long run, that is the only road which will take you and set you apart from everyone else.
Indeed, and as Sir Paul Tucker said, they may call them regulations, but they're basically laws. You try breaking too many too often, and you'll be in prison. So, being in prison, it definitely inhibits entrepreneurial activity. So, that's been very fascinating. Before we wrap up the show, I'd like to thank all you listeners out there, my brand partners of the podcast. Smart is transforming pensions and retirement worldwide. Their leading-edge retirement tech platform propelled them to success in the UK. Now they're operating on four continents and working with partners like Zurich and JP Morgan. Find out more at www.smart.co. The listedboard.com, your guide to entrepreneurial governance and how you can start making your board an engine of growth today. So, Annie, you mentioned TerraPay once or twice in the show. I've got the impression it's a very successful, very large company in terms of numbers of bank accounts, numbers of card transactions, number of countries you're in. But just in terms of the dessert course, what key messages about TerraPay in terms of what you're offering to which people would you like to leave the listeners with? And in particular, what do you need more of tomorrow to make you even a bigger and better company than you are today?
Thank you for giving me the space. So TerraPay, from a simple positioning, we are the plumbers for cross-border money movement. What that really means is, for large financial services companies, we actually move the money at the back. Nobody knows us. Be silently being able to move money across the globe. So that is what we focus on. So the focus is to be able to help consumers like you when they work with your bank. When you want to move money, how can your banks able to offer you a service which is instant, which is cross-border, which is affordable, and the most compliant, way to move money cross border. And it could be for buying something, it could be for sending money to a gift to your daughter who's studying up overseas, or your mother who's in a living somewhere. How can we be able to help move this cross border money efficiently? That is what we do. So we're not a consumer facing brand, Mike. So nobody would know us as a consumer, as an individual. Nobody would know us. But your banking partners, your money remittance partners, all would work with us, and we would be able to deliver that transaction silently. That's the reason I use the word plumbing. We are able to move money like a plumbing network across the world instantly, across now 144 countries, across 7.5 billion bank accounts, which we can connect and deliver transactions to, 2.5 billion mobile wallets we can connect to worldwide, and close to around 6 billion cards we can deliver to instantly. So that is what we are. We are network, we're infrastructure, for cross-border money movement.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for that, and congratulations to you guys on your enormous success in getting where you are. And I hope that you keep asking the questions that people think are silly questions but actually aren't silly questions, so that what you're offering in future years is even bigger and better than you are today. And I like the fact that the heart of the story is literally the binding energy between founders of a business. It's a cliche, but founders of business, co-founders of business, spend more time with each other than the person they're married to, if they're married. So it's really important that relationship goes as well as the marriage does. So thank you very much, Annie, and I wish you and Tope every success in the future.
First of all, thank you, Mike, for having us. It's a pleasure. You know, I think it's nice to actually sometimes talk about some of these life-changing events. So thank you for listening to me. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you're in need of a non-executive or advisory director with deep expertise, experience, and contacts in the worlds of both traditional FS and fintech, or unique insight into how to make your board an engine of growth today, contact me at mike@mikeballyman.com. If you just need one-off advice in these areas, via clarity.fm/mikeballyman.
We could sit in a bender all day, watching the firelight dance, watching the firelight dance. We could walk in the mountains before dawn, watching a happy moon ride, watching a happy moon ride. Come away from the city, with the tarmac so dead and the people so sad. Come away from the city, with the faces so gray, with the pain of the mountains and the trees. Can you see what I mean? Can you see what I mean? We fit in between the earth and the sky. Kiss the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye, wave the city goodbye, city goodbye. Watch the firelight dance with me, 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 watch the firelight.